I'm here. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of The Deepest Lore. Again, hopefully you've got a beverage of some sort. I've got today I'm drinking tea. It's Marks and Spencer's Extra Strong, and we're in for a super duper chilled stream today, where we will be looking at British kids shows, specifically from the 1970s. From the 1970s, well, people are telling me to look at a tweet. Now, this is meant to be a politics-free zone, so a lot of people are telling me to. Oh dear, oh dear, oh dear. Okay, so this is going to be a politics-free zone, but I will just say that a very interesting tweet has just been sent by the President of the United States. I'll just say that so people can have a look, have a look at it in their own time. But very interesting indeed. But so this is going to be your oasis of calm. It's going to be, So I mean, just people are asking me what. I don't want to talk about politics, but he did. He tweeted about the Dominion systems taking 2.3 million votes away from him, giving them to his opposition. Okay, so we're going to be looking at British kid shows from the 1970s, and I'm interested in this era of shows from the 1970s. And I'm going to, but what we're going to do, it's going to be an uber chill stream, okay? And I'm just going to spend it watching some shows from the 1970s. Now, in the interests of disclosure here, I wasn't actually around in the 1970s. I was around in the 1980s, so I didn't actually watch these. I either only saw them as repeats, or just because I'm sad, kind of took an interest and went back. But there's something about the whole vibe of the 70s kid shows that are interesting. And as ever, I'll be we'll be watching them together, but I may occasionally pause and provide some commentary on what's going on. Okay, so let me share my screen. I picked out a few shows. The first one we're going to watch together is The Mr. Men. Fantastic original. And I picked out, I picked out Mr. Uppity as one to watch out of interest. So let's watch this one together.
Mr. Uppity was one of the rudest people in the world.
Oh, I'll just immediately say, amazing title theme and great narration work already in this. This is already better than probably anything you can find on television today.
If not the rudest, he was rude to anybody and everybody. So, of course, in Big Town, which is where he lived, he had no friends at all. Not one.
Miserable old Uppity.
They used to call him, and he certainly looked it. Now, as well as being rude, Mr. Uppity was also rich. Very rich. One of the richest people in the world, if not the richest. He had the largest, longest limousine in Big Town. He had the largest, longest garden.
Now, one of the things I'll just mention here is that When I was growing up reading the Mr. Men books, you know, you were led to believe that everybody would live in a house like this. You know, looking back in 2020, in many ways that was setting up a whole generation of kids for, you know, false expectations in a way, because you know, look at that, all of these houses are detached houses somewhere in the country, with greenery and clouds in the sky. It's a lovely little bit of, you know, it's a lovely thing to look forward to. And in a way, it was not the country we came to inherit, let's say, from this era.
In Big Town. He had, on the top of a hill in the middle of Big Town, the most enormous house. The biggest house in Big Town. And there he lives, all alone, miserable old Uppity. One day, Mr. Uppity was walking in the gardens of his enormous house when suddenly he heard a voice.
Hello,
said the voice. Mr. Uppity looked, and there, in one of his hundreds of flower beds, was a goblin.
Are you not going to say hello to me?
Said the goblin. Go away, said Mr. Uppity rudely.
Oh, I know who you must be,
said the goblin.
You must be Mr. Uppity, who's rude to everybody.
Sniffed Mr. Uppity rudely.
Well, I know somebody who wants to meet you,
said the goblin.
And he skipped off,
the way goblins do. Mr. Uppity's curiosity got the better of him. He followed.
In there,
said the goblin, pointing at a small hole in a tree. Don't be silly, snorted Mr. Uppity.
Oh, I'm not being silly,
said the goblin. Yes, you are, snapped Mr. Uppity. I can't possibly get in there. Smiled the goblin. And then he said a magic word, known only to goblins, which sounded like wobbling, something like that. Suddenly, Mr. Uppity started shrinking. He shrank. And he shrank until he was exactly the same size as the goblin. Turn me back to my proper size at once, said Mr. Uppity in a rage.
I shan't,
grinned the goblin. And so saying, the goblin climbed through the hole into the tree. Poor Mr. Uppity didn't know what to do, so he followed him. Inside the tree, there was a staircase going down and down. It led directly to the kingdom of the goblin.
I demand to be taken immediately to whoever is in charge,
said Mr. Uppity angrily.
Oh, you shall. So you shall,
grinned the goblin. And he led Mr. Uppity through the streets of the kingdom of the goblins until they came to a palace. The goblin and Mr. Uppity passed through the gates and into a courtyard and through some more gates and along a long corridor and through some large gold doors and into a huge room. And there, sitting on a gold throne, King of the Goblins.
Your Majesty,
announced the goblin, bowing low.
May I present Mr. Uppity?
Ah, said the king. So you're the fellow who goes about being rude to everybody, doesn't have any friends.
Rubbish,
said Mr. Uppity rudely.
I can see that what I have heard is true, said the king.
Now, I do love the narration work here. I believe it's Arthur Lowe. Of Dad's Army fame.
Looking at the indignant Mr. Uppity.
You're much too puffed up with our own importance. Therefore, he continued, I'm going to allow you to be turned back to your proper size. But when you get back to Big Town, if you're rude to anybody at all, you will immediately shrink to the size you are now. You understand?
The goblin then took Mr. Uppity back through the kingdom of the goblins, and up the staircase, and out of the tree at the bottom of Mr. Uppity's garden. The goblin looked at Mr. Uppity and said something which sounded like googly googly googly, and Mr. Uppity grew and grew back to his original size.
Now, you remember what the king said,
warned the goblin.
Don't you be so uppity in future.
Mr. Uppity marched off furiously up to his enormous house. The following day, Mr. Uppity was out walking through the streets of Big Town. Suddenly, he came across a little boy playing with a ball. Get out of my...
That little boy reminds me a little bit of Mark, doesn't it? It's Mark.
Away, snapped Mr. Uppity. But as soon as he'd said it, you know,
You know what happened, don't you? Yes. Mr. Upperty shrank and shrank until he was no bigger than the ball the boy was playing with.
Oh, dear,
he gasped, and then he thought. I'm sorry, he said to the boy. What I meant to say was, please go to get fast. Immediately, Mr. Upperty grew to his original size. The boy moved, and Mr. Upperty went on his way. Then he met an old lady carrying a large shopping basket.
Excuse me, she said to Mr. Upperty. Could you tell me the time, please?
No. So
somebody's saying is the moral not to trust the Irish.
But as soon as he'd said it, you know what happened, don't you? Oh dear, he gasped, and then he thought. I'm sorry, he said to the old lady. What I meant to say was, it's 11:25. Immediately, Mr. Upperty grew to his original size, and the old lady thanked him, and Mr. Upperty went on his way. Then he went and bought a newspaper from a man standing on the corner of the main street in Big Town. He was just about to walk away when suddenly he stopped and thought. Turned back to the man and said, thank you. Thank you was a word Mr. Upperty had never used before. The man smiled. A smile was something Mr. Upperty wasn't used to getting. Thank you was a word Mr. Upperty not only had never used before, but it was a word he'd never had said to him before. Mr. Upperty smiled. He felt happy. Happy was a feeling Mr. Upperty wasn't used to feeling. He liked it. And do you know, from that day forward to this day backward, Mr. Upperty is a changed person. He's still the richest person in Big Town, perhaps the richest person in the world. But now he has lots of friends, and he smiles a lot, and he never gets that shrinking feeling. And do you know which two words Mr. Upperty uses most of all these days? Please and thank you.
So, lovely little moral there for the Mr. Men. Yeah, somebody was saying that my volume was, you know, I tried to adjust the volumes to make them better. So yeah, I really enjoyed that. Nice little story. Did you notice the slight class element to the whole thing where Mr. Upperty, he was clearly not of the there was a suggestion that he may have come into this money, that he was kind of nouveau riche, as it were, due to the slight regional accent that Arthur Lowe gave him. So I thought that was quite interesting. So we're going to move on now to another one, and this is show that was on. I think they used to repeat it when I was a kid, but this was on in the 70s as well, and this is Finger Bobs.
Finger Bobs. Yaffe lifts a finger, and a mouse is there. Puts his hands together, and a seagull takes the air. Yaffe lifts a finger, and a scampi darts about. Yaffe bends another, and a tortoise head peeps out. These hands were made for making, and making they must do.
I need lots of stones and pebbles for my story today. Are you feeling strong, Finger Mouse? Do you think you could get me some pebbles? Big ones and small ones, rough ones and smooth ones. All sorts of shapes and sizes and colors. All right. All right, says Finger Mouse.
Finger Mouse, Finger Mouse, the never stop to think a mouse. The always on the brink a mouse. Finger Mouse, that's me. I am the mouse called Finger Mouse, the mouse with guts and verve. I get past cats so easily with my famous body swerve.
Famous body swerve.
Finger Mouse, Finger Mouse, I'm a sort of wonder mouse, a hit, a miss, a blunder mouse. Finger Mouse. That's me.
A beach is a good place for pebbles. Should be all sorts of different kinds here. Here's a nice one. I wonder what Yoffie wants pebbles for. I'll just make a pile of them here. Oops, dropped that one. Still. Plenty of pebbles on a beach. A little one. That's easier. I wonder what story Yoffie can tell with pebbles. I can't think of one. Never mind. I'll go and get some more. That's an interesting looking stone. Or is it a rock with five little stones on it? A ticklish rock. I'll investigate that later. Look at this great pile of stones here. One, two, three, four, five. I think the big one's best for Yoffie. What a weight. Can't get it up.
Yoffie is the name of the strange man with a beard, by the way, who's... I wonder what Yoffie's story is.
I think I'll stick to something more ordinary. Is going to need some help carrying those stones.
Now, would you trust this guy? Would you trust this guy to babysit your kids?
Enoch, see what you can do. Now, where's Finger Mouse? Ah, there you are. Come to help, says Finger Mouse. All these pebbles have to be taken back to Yoffie. Needs a bit of organizing, says Enoch. Now you go to the beach and collect me some bits of wood, and I'll fix something. There. This what you mean? Yes. That's fine. A woodpecker's beak is very useful. Enoch can use it as a sort of drill.
The woodpecker is called Enoch. Enoch the woodpecker.
Look how fast he's drilling. Can you tell what he's making? It looks like a wheel. Now, what would he want a wheel for? Can you guess?
So just to interrupt this a second, one thing that interests me is what is Yoffie doing in Britain making this show for British TV? Like, clearly this guy's from California. What's his story? Like, how the hell did he make it over to London to make this show? I'd be really interested to know, like, what's the backstory of Yoffie? I reckon he left America disgusted at the election of Nixon, so he came over to Britain for political reasons, and then ended up making this show, I reckon, because he's clearly a hippie of some sort, isn't he?
"There you are," says Enoch, "a cart to carry your pebbles. I'll tell Yoffy you're on your way. It's a very nice cart. Hold on. Who's going to load this cart? Finger Mouse. It's me. Oof.
Very chill, the show, very chill.
"Well, as no one helped me load up, I suppose no one's going to help me unload. One. Two. Three. Now I'll show you why I wanted all those stones. If I draw a dot just here and a line across there and another dot there, what do you think it looks like? I think it looks like a duck's head. Here's a long, thin stone. Put an eye there, another one there, and a smile. Bit like a caterpillar. Very happy caterpillar. Here's a funny one. Oh, yes, I see something. Line there for the ear. There's an eye and a smiling mouth. A nose and a tail. Happy hippopotamus.
It's pretty good, actually. It's really good.
A duck, a caterpillar, and a hippopotamus.
It's a great idea.
I'll draw on some more stones.
Good. I enjoyed that. So what else have we got on the docket? Oh yeah, here comes Bod. Let's have a look at this one.
Aunt Flo is very sad to see all the leaves falling from that cherry tree, but Bod cheers her up. The leaves must fall before the blossom.
So one of the things I always wondered about Bod, this is Aunt Flo. This is meant to be like a hat of Aunt Flo, but it just looks like an apple on her head all the time. What is the deal with Aunt Flo's hat?
Autumn comes again in the spring, he tells her. That's right, isn't it? He says to Frank, the postman who is passing by. Of course, says Frank. The blossom can't come until the leaves have fallen. That's so, isn't it? He says to Farmer Barlinow, who is passing by. Very much so.
So everybody's saying in the chat that it's not really a hat that Aunt Flo's wearing, but a hair bun. One of the cool things about Bod is that each of the characters have their own little theme tune. I don't know if you noticed that. It's pretty cool.
Says Barleyman. The leaves must fall before the blossom comes. That's the law of things, isn't it, Constable? Says Barleyman to P.C. Copper, who comes by just then. Yes, says P.C. Copper. The leaves must fall so the blossom can come. That's the law of things. So the leaves fall. Then, after the winter, it's spring, and the blossom comes. And Aunt Flo is happy again. Isn't it beautiful, she says. It is, says Bod. But when the blossom begins to fall, Aunt Flo feels sad. Once again, Bod cheers her up. The blossom must fall before the cherries can come, says Bod. That's right, isn't it? Yes, says Frank. Yes, says Barleyman. Quite right, says P.C. Copper. And Aunt Flo feels happy again. So the blossom falls, and in the summer, the cherries come. Every day, Aunt Flo and Bod go to look at the cherries ripening. Aren't they coming along, says Bod to Frank. They are, says Frank. Aren't they coming along nicely, says Frank to Barleymow. Very nicely, says Barleymow. Very nicely indeed. They're ripe for picking, says Barleymow. Yes, says P.C. Copper. They're beauties. Then let's all come tomorrow morning, says Bod, and help Aunt Flo pick them. But when they get to the tree, they find Aunt Flo almost in tears. There's hardly a cherry left. The birds have eaten them. This time, Bod doesn't know how to cheer her up. But then, up in the tree, the birds start to sing. They sing so beautifully that Bod, Frank, Barleymow, P.C. Copper, and Aunt Flo listen spellbound. You see, says Bod to Aunt Flo, it's your cherries that have helped to make the birds sing so beautifully. And that makes Aunt Flo happy again.
Awesome. How good is Bod? So one of the things I'll say, I think the narrator is John Lemessier, also of Dad's Army fame, and various other shows. He was married to Hattie Jakes, famously of Carry On fame, and apparently had a very odd relationship with her, whereby she used to sleep with other men upstairs, I heard. But this is very, I think I would play some more Bod theme tune. Just compare this, right? So, you know, we're saying these things are chill and you know, lovely kind of pastel colors and cool music. Compare this to the kind of horrible CG monstrosities you'd find on Amazon Prime, for example. Anyway, I picked up another one, and that is one of my favorites, Trumpton. Famously, I broke down Trumpton on when I was looking at the Boomer Truth regime. Do you remember I compared Trumpton to the Raggy Dolls and see how much changed in the space of 10 years? I'm interested in looking at the Rag and Bone Man, maybe. Let's look at the Rag and Bone Man.
Here is the clock, the Trumpton clock, telling the time steadily, sensibly, never too quickly, never too slowly, telling the time for Trumpton.
Just look at the picture of order there. Everybody knows what's going on. The time, everything's got its place. We respect the policeman. There's no question of any breakdown in the order here. Everybody knows. Everybody's got a place in the great chain. Wonderful world of Trumpton. See, why was I denied the world that had this greengrocer in it? This world with this greengrocer and this policeman is a much better world, is it not? Don't you want to belong to this world?
The mayor is out on his balcony looking very agitated. Where is Mr. Troop? I wish he'd hurry up. He really should be in good time today, of all days. Here comes Mr. Troop. He seems to be rather excited, too. A red carnation for the mayor, please, Mrs. Cobbett. There we are, Mr. Troop. Isn't it a lovely day? Yes, yes, Mrs. Cobbett, but I haven't time to stand and talk. Not this morning. Dear, dear, says Mrs. Cobbett. They do seem to be in a tizzy this morning. Whatever's going on? Now, Mr. Troop, says the mayor, is everything ready? I think so, your worship. Chippy Minton is starting on the notice boards, and I've ordered the silver cup. Ah, yes, the tidy-up Trumpton cup. Though I say it myself, Mr. Troop, that was one of my most brilliant ideas. Trumpton is becoming thoroughly untidy. What we need is a week's good tidy-up and a really splendid prize for the best effort. It's a marvellous idea, your worship. Just wait until everyone reads the posters. The posters, says the mayor. I must go and have a word with Mr. Munnings at once. Rag and Bone!
So one of the things I remember, I'm just about old enough that when I was a kid, the Rag and Bone Man would come around and you'd hear him, he'd go... Rag and Bone, Rag and Bone. That's how it sounded. But I barely remember it. But probably when I was about 4 or 5, there was still a Rag and Bone Man who'd come round. People would come and give him like scraps, and he'd sell scraps as well.
My word, says Chippy, the Rag and Bone Man is busy today.
I buy, listen for me as I'm passing by. Rags, bottles and bones, I cry. Rags, bottles and bones.
Now, crushingly, I think the Rag and Bone Man was probably put out of business by eBay. You know, if there was still Rag and Bone Man getting by in the late 90s, I think eBay probably, eBay or what's the one now? Etsy. These are probably you know, making it very difficult to be a rag and bone man in 2020.
Bric-a-brac, bicycles, books or brass, rags and bones I buy, pottery, pewter or china and glass, rags, bottles and bones I cry, rags, bottles and bones. Turn out the attic and under the stairs, rags and bones I buy, old-fashioned furniture, sofas or chairs, rags, bottles and bones I cry, rags, bottles and bones.
I mean, what's brilliant looking at this is that everything was homegrown. Nothing made, you know, nothing in the Rag and Bone Man's collection there was made in China, was it?
He'd better call on us, says Nibs. Mum's always saying she's going to have a good turnout one of these days. She never does, though, says Chippy. Just as well. A lot of the things in my workshop may look like rubbish, but they're really very important. Come on, Nibs. We'd better get started. Meanwhile, in Chippy's workshop, Mrs. Minton is going to have a good turnout. Chippy told her about the mayor's tidy-up Trumpton week at breakfast time, and she thinks it's a splendid idea. That rocking horse has been standing there for years, she says. I can't think why Chippy keeps it. The children are much too big for it, and in any case, it's got a broken leg. It's high time we threw it away.
Rag and bone!
The Rag and Bone Man, says Mrs. Minton. Just what I need. Would you take an old rocking horse for me? It's taking up a lot of space and I'm trying to have a good tidy up. That's what everyone says, ma'am, says Raggy Dan. Never seen so much rubbish as folk are turning out. It's the mayor and his tidy week. I just don't know what to do with it all. Oh dear, says Mrs. Minton. Don't say you can't manage the rocking horse after all. Well, says Raggy Dan, I dare say I can. Shall I come in and carry it out for you? Yes, please, says Mrs. Minton. I think I've taken a bit too much here. I shouldn't have picked up that rocking horse, really. It's such a long way back to my yard, too. Now, there's a nice, useful shed. I wonder if it's empty. A few sacks, flower pots, old boxes. Plenty of room for a bit more. Wouldn't hurt, just for an hour or two. I'll collect it later. And Raggy Dan is going to put all the rubbish off his barrow into the shed. Good morning, Mr. Craddock, says the mayor. I expect you've heard of the Tidy Up Trumpton Week. Oh, yes, your worship.
I mean, it's not a bad initiative, you know. The mayor decides things get a bit messy. Tidy up Trumpton Week. And it's all done within the community. It's nice, isn't it? Lovely little community spirit, social cohesion, order. These are things they've taken away from us.
As a matter of fact, I'm just going to tidy up the tool shed. Not that it's in a terrible mess, you understand. Just my usual visit to straighten things up. As you know, I like things tidy myself. Gracious me, says the mayor. For a man who likes things tidy, this is a terrible mess, Mr. Craddock. It looks like a jumble sale. And what's that? A rocking horse? Seems like it, sir. But I don't know how it got there, I'm sure. Nothing to do with me. Well, Mr. Craddock, I think you'd better have a good big bonfire, don't you? And now I must be going. I have to open the new children's ward at the Trumpton Hospital this afternoon.
Well, no, that would be tragic, because if they burn the Rag and Bone Man intends to sell that stuff, so if they put it on the bonfire, that will be all his livelihood gone. They can't let them burn it, surely.
I certainly will have a bonfire, says Mr. Craddock. I've never seen such rubbish. And in my shed, too. Splendid, Mr. Minton, says the mayor. That's a nice, neat job. Thank you, Your Worship. You know, Mr. Minton, one finds rubbish in the most extraordinary places. I even found a rocking horse this morning in a tool shed in Trumpton Park. A rocking horse, Your Worship? A rocking horse. Not a very good one, of course. The front leg was broken, as far as I remember. Chippy begins to feel rather worried. It couldn't be his rocking horse, could it? Because there is something very special about Chippy's horse, something nobody else knows about. Any old rags? Calls Raggy Dan. Any old bikes, chairs, prams, rocking horses? Excuse me, says Chippy, but since you mentioned rocking horses, has anyone given you a rocking horse this morning? Yes, says Raggy Dan. That's what made me mention it. A lady from the cottages out on the Oakwich Road gave me one. Broken front leg it had. That's my rocking horse, says Chippy. Oh, dear, this is dreadful. Come, come, Mr. Minton, says the mayor. Whatever is the matter? It wasn't a very good rocking horse. No, sir, it wasn't, says Chippy. But the trouble is, I kept my savings in it. Hidden under the saddle. Good heaven, says the mayor. I told Mr. Craddock to put it on the bonfire. Quick, we must ring up the fire brigade. We'll phone from my office.
Oh, this is going to be epic. This is going to be awesome.
Trumpton Fire Station. Captain Flack here. A fire. A real fire. Oh, a bonfire. Still, you never know, it might get out of hand. Yes, Your Worship, we'll be there at once.
A fire? A real fire in Trumpton? Surely not. Oh, it's just bonfire. All right.
McGrew, Cuthbert, Dibble, Grub.
Now, I just do want to mention one thing. I hate to get all utilitarian here, but we just heard that the chief of the fire brigade was surprised that there was a real fire in Trumpton, and yet they still maintain this crew of what, like six, seven full-time firemen for this little town. I mean, those are the days, eh?
Flack, you were just in time. You've rescued all my savings. What in that horse? Says Mr. Craddock. That's a silly thing to do. Why ever don't you keep your money in the bank? I will after this, says Chippy. I should hope so too, says the mayor. Here, says Raggy Dan. What's going on? You mustn't burn all that stuff. That's good quality rubbish. Then you must take it away, Mr. Dan, says the mayor. All except the rocking horse. and I want that for the children's ward of the new Trumpton Hospital. Will you mend it for me, Mr. Minton? Certainly, Your Worship, says Chippy. I'll make it look as good as new. Now, Mr. Dan, I have decided to present you with the Tidy Up Trumpton Cup. Without your help, we could never have done so well. One can't tidy up a town without somebody to take away the rubbish. Will you come to the band concert this afternoon to receive it? Oh, says Dan. Thank you, Your Worship. I'll be there.
See, look at the moral of this. Even the lowly Raggy Dan, even the rag and bone man, has his place in the great chain of being in Trumpton. Epic, absolutely epic. All right, let's see what sort of, if there's any super chats or anything come in. Maybe we'll do one more before we get out of here. So I'll have a look at some super chats. And then what we'll do is we'll see if there's anybody, any old veterans who can remember the 70s who may have anything they want to see, basically. So we'll have a look at that in a second. You know, maybe a five, you know, like a 5 minute last show that we'll look at. Just a few super chats. Jedi Knight Anna Quinge Walker says, Google Plasenia botched restoration, art is dead. Plasenia botched art restoration. Oh gosh. Oh God. That is awful. I'll just show you this. That is really, really sad. I want Mr. D to make that his new avatar. I want him to make that his new avatar, that face. Okay. Then what else? Time Stealer says Mr. Upperty equals low time preference, Gnome equals high time preference. Yeah, I mean, I think the accent that Arthur Lowe gave him gave me the impression that Mr. Upperty was some sort of like northern industrialist. That was kind of what he sounded like to me. Admiral Chunder says books on the different conceptions of French and English liberty. Yeah, there's an essay by F.A. Hayek talking about individualism, true and false. If you can find that essay, that talks about the different conceptions of English and French liberty, whereby Hayek says it's the English tradition, not the French tradition, that you want to go for. There's also a book here that I've got by... Is it Justin Raimondo? It's called The Philosophy of the Austrian School. If you track down that book by not Justin Raimondo. It's by Raimondo Cebedu. It's called The Philosophy of the Austrian School, and the essays in there has also differences between English and French liberty. Jedi Knight Anakin Cringewalker says, Enoch clearly took AA's foundations of economics and knew the utility value of fine carpentry wheels. Mr. Mouse is nothing more than a consumer. Yeah, indeed. Enoch the Woodpecker showing the value of production. So he was a supply-sider, wasn't he? Benjamin Rood says, why did we need new kids' content? What was wrong with this stuff? It's good enough and better than what we have now for kids today. Grr, at pausing. I mean, I would say that the four shows that we watched are infinitely superior to the CG monstrosities that you see now. So, yeah, and they're also a lot more chilled out. There's so much kind of frenetic energy in the kid shows now. And I don't know why they couldn't all be chill, like the ones we've been watching. Jedi Knight Anakin and Quinnage Walker says, Raggy Don came to drain Trumpton Swamp, but ended up destroying the swamp savings and having to save them in the end. Allegorical or prophetic? Well, indeed. Very, very good. Although the fact that he was, the fact that one he was actually saving is a good thing, I think. Oh, and Yetremez says, one for the stream, AA. Your infectious boomer chortling was with the super. It was worth the super chat alone. Well, thank you very much, sir. Thank you very much. And I'll just go to the normal chat now to see if there's anybody who has recommended, you know, what to watch. Let's have a look. Danger Mouse is too late. I really want Magic Roundabout. I think it's a bit early. Do you know, I reckon there's one which had Kenneth Williams. What's it called? Willow the Wisp. Say Willow the Wisp. Let's go for that, because Kenneth Williams was the voiceover, and I think we'll leave it there. So although that seems to be, let's have a look. Wood of the West may be a bit early, actually. Maybe 60s. What we really want is okay, now let's go for Will o' the Wisp. All right. And that will be the last one that we watch together before we get out of here. This is called Thoughts of Moog.
One of the nicest of all the small people who live in Doily Woods is the Moog. Not the brightest of animals, perhaps, but a heart of gold. It is thought that he might be some kind of dog, but no one is quite sure.
I think I am a doggy.
Now that is something he must never do. Think! How well I remember the last time that happened. The Moog had been sitting in the woods for some time, saying to himself,
"It's not very nice sitting here,"
which was because he was sitting on a thistle. Then suddenly, it was a Thinks cloud.
"I think,"
said the Moog. It was his first thought ever.
"I think there is a spiky something right underneath me."
And before the Moog's poor brain could take a well-deserved rest, up came thought number two.
"I think I shall. I think I... I think I shall get up, and then I shall move across, and then I shall sit down over there."
Which he did.
"I was right. There was a spiky something. That was very clever thinking."
The Moog then started to think of all sorts of things.
"That is a cup. And that is a saucer. Well, that is an old boot." "Hey, now I'm thinking of Evil Edna, the Wicked Witch. And that's a big red squashy tomato. Now I'm going to think something very naughty. Oh, that was very funny. Hello, Edna. I was just thinking about you."
"Ha! I trust you were thinking nice things."
Now here, a brighter animal would have told a fib.
No, Edna, not nice things, but it was very funny. I thought of you being hit in the face with a tomato.
Ah, little Moog, you know what your trouble is. You are too unselfish.
Oh?
You should think of yourself occasionally. Can you think of yourself, Moog?
I'll try. Yeah, that's me.
Come, Moog, you can do better than that. Think hard, really hard. Now I've got you, you malicious mongrel, trapped in some...
So people are saying that Will-O-The-Wisp is actually 80s, and is this the dark art of Thatcherism we're seeing here? They're actually trying to teach selfishness to the kids here.
Hide your own thinks cloud! And the place for a thinks cloud is up in the sky with all the other clouds!
Quick, Mavis, look up into the sky!
Gasped Arthur the Caterpillar to Mavis Cruet.
Oh, Arthur, it's the little Moog!
Yeah, and he didn't get up there by accident, Maeve. That's the work of evil Edna.
The Moog's up there forever.
Mavis, wave the old magic wand and make a rain spell.
How can a spell of rain help the poor Moog, Arthur? Oh, all right. Oh, Arthur, that is clever. The clouds drop all their rain and then vanish.
Clouds is like them, Maeve.
So I do think, because people are saying this is 1981, I think you can tell there's a definite tonal shift between the other shows that we watched and this. Definitely a tonal shift, I would say.
Oh, Arthur, it worked. The Moog is as free as a birdie.
Pity he can't fly, Maeve.
Hey, I think I'm on television.
And they all cried,
"Don't think, Moog!"
So I would say that was quite poor compared to some of the others that we watched. But let's have a look if there's anything else we can have a little, like the idea of watching some of this.
Ever seen a driver blow in the bag? It's getting to be a far more familiar sight than it used to be. Over 2,000 drivers are breathalyzed every week.
Look at this chap. Had a marvelous time. Didn't think for 1 second, now I'm not fit to drive. Then he makes a stupid mistake. Didn't think he'd ever be stopped and have to blow in the bag. We didn't consider himself a criminal. He'd only had a couple of drinks. But he'll lose his license. And unfortunately, his wife can't drive.
But he was one of the lucky ones. Last December, a quarter of all the drivers killed were known to be over the limit. Last year, there were nearly 40,000 convictions. Make sure you're not added to this year's total. Drinking and driving. It's just not worth it.
It's just not worth it, kids.
When a drunken driver gets his license back...
How much?
His insurance can often double.
What, for third party?
Disqualified. Drinking and driving.
He'll find it expensive wherever he goes.
It's more than I paid for the motor.
And the real joke is, although he's allowed to drive...
I start to, pal.
Can he afford to?
I'll do you a favour. I'll buy the motor off you.
Most of us reckon we can handle our motors after a few pints. Take it easy and you don't attract the law. But what if some stupid git does this? Or this? Or this? Those few pints have just cost you your license. So is the stupid git now.
Pushing this pretty hard in the 70s, weren't they?
Right, I'm off then.
Forget the car when you go for a drink, and you can also forget the well-meant advice.
Are you sure you're okay to drive?
Forget the self-denial.
No, thanks, mate. I
I'm driving.
She can even forget being a free taxi service. But most important, you can forget this. So if you really want to enjoy a drink, remember, when you fancy a jar, forget the car.
Before you say you'll never get hurt, well, every single day, hundreds of people say it can't happen to me, but it does. Oh. And the difference between an ugly smash-up and just a nasty shake-up could be simply the seatbelt habit. So before any of us say it can't happen to me, snap into that seatbelt habit. You know it makes sense.
If you imagine this is your car, then this is a motorcycle. Now, when you drive up to a main road, it's easy to see other cars. But because a motorcycle is a third of the width of a car, he's very hard to see. But he's dead easy to hurt. Oh. Nasty. And that's why, at junctions, I'm asking you to give a second thought for bikes. Stop. Think once for cars, hold it, then think again for bikes. If you want to avoid this, think once, think twice, think bike.
They're very big on the not crashing.
Diamonds are for danger. The diamond sign means a dangerous load. Look out for the diamond signs. They all mean danger. If there's an accident, when you see the diamond sign, keep away. Go to the nearest phone and dial 999. There might be an explosion or fumes that could kill you. Diamonds are for danger. Keep away.
That's Vicky. This is my dad. That's my sister. This is my mum. And my mum. She always waits there. She worries when we're not all home. Mum and Dad worry when I am. Mind you don't burn yourself. Dry yourself properly. You'll ruin your eyes. And every Saturday morning when me and Mum go shopping, my nan always tells me to look out for the traffic. Me!
I just want to pause here. Clearly this is a working class family, working class kid, you know, they don't have that much money. Just look how big their house is. Look at the house they're living in. Don't tell me we haven't declined.
It's Mum she should be telling. When she wants to get to the shop opposite, she just takes off. She doesn't bother with the crossing. We've been told at school not to go between parked cars, but to use the crossings. And my mum says that's quite right when you're young. At home, there's all that sit up and eat up, otherwise you won't grow up to be big and strong and healthy. And outside, where there are cars and lorries and buses wagging past, my mum should be wearing L-plates crossing the road. Good job she doesn't drive. My dad does, and he's very careful. But he doesn't always practice what he preaches. Me and him had been up in the park Sunday morning. Then he remembered we hadn't bought the car. I started walking to the subway, and he tells me to make us late for our dinner. It's very funny how grown-ups can always be right, even when they're wrong. Now, if anybody had tried that when he'd been driving, he'd have done his nut. The best, though, was when I was with Mum. Me and her were on our way home after getting me more shoes. Anyway, we have to cross the road. And she didn't even see the car coming. She was about to tell the driver what she thought about him, and he was at the car to do the same. And you know who he was? My dad! In our new car. We could have both finished up as mincemeat. And you tell me how they would have explained that to my man.
Not so long ago, people with traffic problems usually found a quick answer. But today's drivers need to keep a cooler head. Do you leave enough space when following other vehicles? And if another car fills the gap, do you drop back? If you don't, this sort of thing can happen. Remember, keep your distance.
Awesome.
Honestly, love, as if I haven't got enough to do. All these blooming doors to cope with. Like getting to Checkpoint Charlie around these corridors.
You want a wedge of openator. Hang about. I've got one here, haven't I? There you go.
Oh, Terry, you are a good boy. That's better.
Sure, I've seen her in Carry On films. I'm sure she's in some of the later Carry On films, that actress.
Just cracking on about them fire doors again. They ought to leave them open all the time. It's stupid, isn't it? You coming in?
If there should be a fire where you work, the quickest way to make it spread is to wedge open a fire door. Fire doors prevent fire spreading, and they're a barrier against suffocating fumes and smoke, giving you enough time to escape to safety. Never wedge open a fire door. Never lock them shut. Fire doors can save lives. Yours, maybe.
last one, then.
You know, each of those cars carries a whole family. Yes, even him. He's probably got a wife and kids, depending on his arriving home safely.
What are his chances? That much less if he doesn't snap into his seatbelt. There can be some pretty frightening results from accidents where people don't wear their seatbelts, and they don't have to be fatal. After all, what's a family with mum or dad laid up in hospital? I know that if you wear a seatbelt, you reduce your chances of being killed or seriously injured by half. So what I'm getting at is this. If you won't belt up for yourself, then please do it for them, because your seatbelt is their security.
Gotta think of the children. Gotta think of the children.
Quite a while punching that message across. Right. Here's my first problem. The driver who takes all the trouble in the world to put a seatbelt on for a long drive along the motorway, but doesn't bother for just popping round the corner, because it's that popping round the corner drive that's the most dangerous, just when you think it's not worth belting up. Think about this one. Over 60% of all traffic accidents happen in built-up areas. So let's get into that seatbelt habit, and let's make it automatic as closing the car door. After all, you wouldn't drive off without hearing this, would you? The clank of the car door closing. Right, let's add another sound. The click of a seatbelt being fastened. Clunk, click. That makes sound sense, doesn't it? Never clunk without you click. You know, we could become a nation of clunk clickers. Is it all worth it? Well, if it's not for you, surely it is for them. Remember, this seatbelt is their security.
I mean, somewhat.
See you, clunk clicker.
Some might argue that was the slippery slope, that becoming a nation of clunk clickers has led to this situation now, where you've got people arguing for more lockdown, could argue. Anyway, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. This was a fun stream. I enjoyed it. It's nice and chill. I just think there's a last minute super chat that's come in, which I will read. Before we get going, oh yeah, there's a few one. Prince of Primer says, "I'm leveling up my econ knowledge with the Foundations of Economic course." Well, thank you very much. Yeah, there's been a lot of sales this week of Foundations of Economics, which is always good to see. And if you're interested in doing that, it's in the show notes. Sign up now. The Foundations of Writing course should be about a week, 2 weeks before I get that done. and that will be going on sale as well. Alex Master says, what about the parsley, the lion and the herbs? I don't know what that is. Matchstick says, so calming and wholesome. Great stream. Yes, thank you very much. I think people enjoyed it. And Benjamin Rood has just come in saying, only addressed to families, correct expectation. Yeah, there was a distinct lack of kind of collective shaming or collective guilt in those adverts. It was all about individual responsibility and thinking of the kids, basically, which is very good to see. All right. Thank you very much, everyone. See you next time. Get out.